Welcome to the Winding Paths podcast. I'm Aaron Shapiro, a former big law attorney turned management consultant.
And I'm Joseph Gerstel, another former big law attorney now running Get Some Class, a startup that helps remote teams build culture through social fun. In this podcast, we'll explore what it takes to chart a nonlinear career path, something we're both in the midst of figuring out. In each episode, we'll sit down with other awesome lawyers who've left the law.
We'll explore how they got to where they are, what motivated them, how they thought about career risk, and what advice they'd offer to others considering this jump. Join us and discover what it takes to forge your own winding path. Our guest today is Jared Kraft. Jared graduated from law school in 2010 and began his career as an associate at Bingham McCutcheon before they were acquired by Morgan Lewis. Then Jared left legal practice and ultimately joined Sunforge, a manufacturer of solar panel charge controllers, where he's now the CEO. We discussed his experience at Bingham after they were acquired, what charge controllers are, and of course, how he's thought about his career at each pivotal moment. Now let's get into it. Jared, great to have you. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, guys.
I'm looking at your LinkedIn, as I do with a lot of our guests. You went to law school, and then now it looks like you are CEO of Sunforge LLC and also a fractional COO of a company called Animals. Maybe just to start us off, when you went to law school, did you plan on becoming CEO and or COO, or what was the plan?
I won't say that I went to law school without a plan, as many people do. I went to law school because I was actually really interested in policy, and I had worked on some political campaigns before law school. I took like 5 years off between college and law school. So going into law school, I absolutely didn't intend on being in business, whether it was clean tech hardware, which is what Sunforge is, or content marketing, which is what Animals is. Fact is that I graduated law school, or I came out of law school into the recession of 2009, 2010, and it was kind of like, okay, get a job. And my then girlfriend, now spouse, was also in Boston, graduating business school at the same time. So I got a job at a law firm because I was lucky enough to do that. You know, half of our summer class was told, like, you're not getting offers. You know, it was like one of those situations.
Give us a detail there, Jared. I'm just curious, you know, from somebody going through that time, what did it look like? What is the process? You know, who didn't get jobs, you know?
I mean, I don't really know why people who didn't get offers didn't get offers, except I have to imagine that it was just part of it was like prestige for the law firm, obviously. Like the fact that I was at Harvard probably gave me a pretty good, I probably would have had to really bomb the summer to knock an offer in retrospect. I think it was just like they were really like into culture fit and things like that. I don't think anybody really messed up. I mean, there were a couple people who were a little bit immature, but like I think it was kind of like Hunger Games, you know. It was like literally the first day where they're like, we're not giving all of you offers, we're giving like half of you offers.
You mean this is at the summer job?
Yeah, like the first day of the summer.
Yeah, that doesn't happen nowadays.
No, and it didn't happen before that either. It's like I got to live in this like window of like psychosis. And then, you know, went into the law firm and, you know, worked for a while doing various things. And
Wait. I'm not done with this yet. Okay. I need some more detail here. So, right. half of your class, what law firm were you at?
I went into Bingham.
Which is now merged with WilmerHale?
Morgan Lewis. Yeah.
Morgan Lewis. Okay. Yeah. So half of your class did not get offers at the end.
Yeah. And they knew it. Like we knew it. It wasn't like a surprise at the end. It was a surprise at the beginning. So basically they oversubscribed on their summer class.
Because the recession hit, they heard before the recession.
So that was like 2009 when we did our summer. So we were applying for that like late 2008, early 2009.
You started law school in 2007, like basically moments before everything went awry.
Yeah, you know, it was like the end of the Bush administration. I actually interned the first summer on Capitol Hill for the Joint Economic Committee. I actually split my time at the Joint Economic Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee. You know, there were some rumblings then, I remember. Mm-hmm. But nothing like no one... I mean, people predicted what was going to happen, but they were like voices in the wilderness, you know? No one really saw that coming with the real estate market. Anyway, yeah, so we went through all that, and then the first first day of like summer, it was like, all right, hey, congratulations. Only half of you are going to be here after this.
At what point did you know you were going to go to a law firm? I mean, it's the sort of natural next step when you're in law school, especially if you're in law school without a particular plan in mind.
I originally was thinking I'm going to go do more policy-oriented law firm stuff, maybe in DC. And then it was really hard, even for that summer, it was really hard to like, it was very competitive. And any law firm that even sniffed that like I wasn't like 100% into DC, it was like, nope, sorry. So the only offers for the summer I get were Boston offers.
This is the interview process, right? And the pressure, there's already a sense that we're entering some sort of recession or financial crisis, but it hasn't peaked yet, right?
Right.
Or, you know, whatever, the opposite of
bottomed peaked. Out, yeah.
Bottomed, yeah.
That's about right. And also with being with the woman I eventually married, that was a relationship I wanted to stay in at that point. So, you know, there were life factors too. And she was graduating from Sloan in Boston, and she was going to be around here. So it was kind of disingenuous of me to be like, yeah, I'm all in on DC, you know? So I think they could tell. So the offers that I got for the summer were, I think I got 3 or 4 in Boston. So I was going to be here, and I liked Bingham the most people-wise. And
that all makes sense, right? You go to law school, you're not exactly sure what you're going to do.
Yeah.
When people do that, they typically land at a law firm.
Yep. Yep.
So you landed at a law firm despite, you know, some headwinds.
And I didn't want to clerk. Like I was one of the older folks in my class. I was 27 when I started law school, and I didn't really buy in on the sort of like treadmill stuff of law review and clerking. I never got into it. I always had the sense that I wasn't really destined to go that route. It didn't feel right. And then once I got into a law firm, I realized that I don't actually like writing that much, and that's literally all it is. So,
were you a litigation associate, or were you doing transactional work?
I started that way, and I pivoted over to corporate and started doing project finance work.
How long did you last as a litigation associate?
A couple of years. I did. I had some fun. My pro bono work was really fun. I worked on the marriage equality cases. I did some other interesting pro bono work, actually around transgender rights at that point, which was sort of like far off in the horizon as a major issue. So that was really cool, but it was hard to find work in the firm. I'm not going to lie. It was like, it was a tough time unless you were in bankruptcy. And then corporate started coming on, and I switched over to project finance because I had some good relationships there. And then we got acquired, and the whole vibe of the firm changed, and I wasn't making hours because I just switched practice groups, and like, we just had our second child, and I was like, I can't deal with this anymore. It was the lifestyle was just miserable. It was a miserable lifestyle. My wife hated it. I couldn't be with my kids. I had no idea when I was going to be home. I was on calls with India at like midnight.
Lifestyle aside, though, could you have imagined, or did you imagine staying in law for, you know, the long term?
Yeah, I think in some capacity, like the realization that dawned on me was when I looked up the sort of ladder at the firm and didn't want anyone's job above me. And I was like, so what the hell is this? Why do I want to work hard just to get something that I don't want?
Did you have the same phrase or saying when you were in law school? I recall when I asked someone what the prize for like getting on the law review was, and they're like, it's more pie. Mm-hmm. Like if you finish the pie, the prize is more pie. Like you work incredibly hard to do the law review competition so that you can work even harder to edit notes, so that you can continue to work incredibly hard to.
Yeah. So you better really like pie, right?
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I think like, I think my,
and have a big appetite.
Yeah. I realized this is not the pie for me. That was the time I knew it was time to go.
Just to orient everyone, right? Like, so you graduate from law school into the recession really at around 2010, mm-hmm. You go to Bingham gets acquired by Morgan Lewis. So in total, you're there, you know, a little bit over 4 years. And then you make this move, it looks like, to COO and general counsel of Sunforge.
Yeah.
But Aaron, before we get there, I think the merger of firms is interesting and is rare enough that I'd like to know what that experience was like. So you said, I think it was Morgan Lewis acquired, quote unquote, Bingham McCutcheon. So let's just stop on acquired there.
Mm-hmm.
And what does acquired mean in the context of a law firm?
Absorbed is one way to put it. That's how it felt. a lot of the partners, especially the junior partners, got lock-in deals, as I recall, like where they weren't allowed to leave for a couple of years. Like it was like, leave now or don't leave for a couple of years. And I know that some folks who did that definitely regretted it.
Meaning there was an equity stake or, you know, financial loss on the table if you left prematurely.
Yeah. I don't know, because I wasn't even like a senior associate at that point. Like I wasn't really privy to like how screwed people were getting. But my sense was that like Morgan Lewis did not have the same equity arrangement among partners. It might be sort of the newer model of like, yeah, you're a partner, and then there's equity partners.
How is it framed to you? Like, what was your experience of the acquisition like?
Oh, it was just a lot of rah-rah pom-pom shaking and very little actual information. The communication with us was not very...
Did you have to move offices?
No, they actually came into our office.
So they moved a bunch of lawyers into your office.
Yeah, they had a smaller group in Boston, and we had a big... That was our headquarters. We had a really big, really nice office in Boston, and so they came in.
So practically... From your experience, it was basically like an email announcement, a couple of new lawyers move into the office you're already in, and maybe some policies change, but otherwise you kind of go about...
Yeah, and I mean, you know, partnership was like, I mean, there were meetings about it and like all firm meetings and all that kind of stuff with the chairman of our firm and the chairman of their firm and kumbaya and everything's gonna be great. And then like, I think 50% of the associates were like gone. You know, it was like, it was...
Why did so many people leave?
I think it was just money. I think it was just like redundancy.
They laid people off.
There was a package. It was like, if you stay, you may not love it. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we're not going to really help you out. But here's like a few months to like leave.
Yeah, we're not laying you off. We're telling you that it would be in your interest to leave. And also here's some money if you make the right decision.
Yeah. And I took the offer. Like, I was like, yeah. I'm good. Like, I hate this.
That's why you were at Morgan Lewis for 4 months, because they took over and you were like, yeah, I'll take that.
And I didn't like the new boss. It's not like meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Culturally, Morgan Lewis was different than Bingham. Bingham was like, it felt like an older style sort of locally. It was a big firm, but it didn't feel that big. Morgan Lewis felt like a machine. It was like, you're a cog, and if you're not producing, you're gone. And it was like, you know, here's the line. Everything below the line is out. At the time, it was very like huge blow to the ego and hugely dispiriting and all that stuff. But in retrospect, it was the best thing that ever happened to me to have that opportunity, because it gave me a runway to like go pursue other things. And it forced me to like take a look at myself and be like, what is really going to bring me joy and spark joy in like my day-to-day life, which I haven't had in a long time. You know, my marriage is suffering. I wanted to see my kids more. I wanted to just have control over my life.
It's like a bit of a jolt, right? You go to law school, you're on this kind of treadmill, like you said, right? Yeah. And yes, you bucked the treadmill a bit, didn't do law review or clerkships, but there's a treadmill and it takes you into law firms. And then there's a kind of treadmill there where do you make partner, do not? Yeah. And until you kind of get jolted.
Yeah. And it was a jolt. And it was one that like, I mean, my father is an attorney. You know, there's a lot of like, I think, get on the couch sort of stuff about parents and expectations and all that stuff. And I think I had to have a lot of serious conversations with him about like, no, Dad, this is not your dream of my career. This is actually my career. You know, he's always supported me and like, he's an awesome father, but you know, it was, well, you think you might get back into it? Like, you know, you want me to call some people, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, no, actually I haven't regretted for 1 minute not continuing to search for a legal path like that.
But you didn't get off the legal train fully.
No, and do we ever, really? I mean, maybe we do.
yes, we do.
I don't know. I am no longer a lawyer, but you better believe I will keep my bar admission for as long as I can.
Same. That I earned it, man. I'm That's not giving right. that up. That's mine. I worked really hard for that little card. I'm not giving that up.
You doing your CLEs, Aaron?
I am doing my every 2 years. Absolutely, I do my CLEs.
Well, in Massachusetts, we're lucky we don't have that. We don't even have CLE here.
I log on as an alum of O'Melveny & Myers. I watch all the videos. You know, I desperately try to find something that will have some amount of relevance.
Yeah, I mean, I kept the hat on in terms of like when you're running a small business, it's really helpful to just like know how to read boring shit and just understand how the law works. Just understand, like, I don't know the answers to this, but I know that I need to find answers to this. Issue spotting, contract negotiation, compliance, like all of those things, you don't have to be a lawyer to do. But if you are a lawyer, it helps a lot.
So I want to take us back.
Yeah.
Morgan Lewis acquires Bingham McCutcheon. There's an offer on the table. You take it. Mm-hmm. Cultural changes. You want to get out. And then somehow you make this jump, it looks like, to COO and general counsel of Sunforge.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
Yeah. How'd that happen?
It was kind of a slowly forming process. I met my business partner at Sunforge while I was an attorney. He's an engineer. He's an MIT engineer, started the company, bootstrapped it. At the time, he was acquiring a competitor, another small competitor of his, to like grow his company. And his original business partner had left. And I was like getting together with him once in a while for lunch and just like sort of doing like business therapy with him. And then I'd get back to my office and like write these emails, like not legal advice, just like strategic, like, hey, this is what I heard you say. This is what I'm thinking. This is what maybe might work as an approach. Here's what we talked about. And we did this a number of times. And then as I left the firm, I just started reaching out to networks. And I was meeting with him one day. And I was like, you know, Alex, it seems like you might need some help, in-person help. And I was like, would you bring me on? Actually, I was actually a contractor. I was actually like sort of had a fractional role there for a couple of months at first.
While you were working as a lawyer?
This is like right after I sort of like pivoted to that and before I like became an official member of the firm. I don't know if LinkedIn, like, I don't know how I did LinkedIn, but it maybe looks seamless for effect. But I think there was a little bit of like time there where I was unofficial there as a more of a consultant who was doing operational stuff. And it was just sort of like, okay, what don't you want to do? He's like, well, I don't want to do people ops. I don't want to do like compliance. I don't want to do running sales and I don't want to like, you know, manage the warehouse and do all this stuff. And I was like, okay, great. I'll do it. So we had an office here and then we had an office out in Southern California. So I started like bouncing back and forth a little bit.
How many people were in the company?
Like 10 people. It's still about the same size. Like we're very lean. We do a lot of outsourced manufacturing, stuff like that. I just really enjoyed it. And it was a good challenge. And I had a lot of fun. And after a few months, he's like, yeah, I'm having fun too. Like, let's do it. Like, let's do this permanently. And so I came on like as a partner in the business and got some equity. And
can we pause here and just like give us the brief explanation of what Sunforge does, what it did at that point, maybe how that has evolved, what it does now. And that'll help us sort of understand also, I think, your role a bit more.
Yeah. So we manufacture what are called charge controllers for off-grid solar. So off-grid solar would be like solar on a boat, solar on a blinking stop sign, a bike share, docking station, an RV, you know, anything that's not plugged into the grid, DC power.
The highway phones?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like solar panel, battery, and then you're running your devices off of that. So we make something called a charge controller, which kind of is like, to use like an automobile analogy that isn't perfect, it's like kind of like a transmission. It basically like takes the energy from the panel and adjusts it so that it charges the battery to the voltage it wants. And especially in the case of lithium batteries, like doesn't overcharge it, you know, reduces the risk of like runaway events in lithium, but also maximizes the amount of power you're getting out of the panel, which is important in off-grid situations because oftentimes the panel is not in an ideal location. It's not like in the middle of a field or something. Like you're, especially on a boat, it's like moving all the time. So the amount of power you're getting off the panel changes and how you have to like handle that power changes like by the second. So long story short, our tech does that well. So that's that business. And so we make these devices, we manufacture them all in the United States, a couple different manufacturing places. And we finish them and package them and ship them from our offices.
Was that something you were interested in? Like, were you interested in solar beforehand? Or was this more about you had this really good relationship with Alex? It was fun to work together. And you had this sort of like experimental phase where you got to do some of this work and you liked it. And so you kept doing it.
I think little column A, little column B. When I was doing transactional, when I was doing project finance work, I did a ton of power plant work in the project finance area. And while I was there, I also got into SREC trading, which are like solar credits. And there's sort of this like secondary market for solar credits that formed in Massachusetts because of a policy that is no longer in play, but was at the time. And I got interested in solar kind of like in that way. But also, a big thing I didn't like about being a big law attorney was that I didn't really morally respect many of my clients or ethically respect them. And I didn't love being a part of like developing more fossil fuel, like power generation projects. I didn't love that I was like helping big gas plants get built, you know? And so the opportunity, like Alex and I got along great. We have a good relationship, but the opportunity to go into something where like I could put my head on the pillow at night and be like, all right, I'm having a positive impact. I'm trying to do something that will like help the world was a major factor. And one that is something that I think about in terms of like where my career will go for sure. I have been in clean tech now for 7.5 years. I love it. It's great. It's a great industry. It's so interesting. There's so much going on. There's so many verticals and so many places where innovation is happening. So it's really fun. It's just like a fun industry to be in. So yeah, I think it's a little of both. And it just sort of lined. It was just nice. It lined up.
So you have this conversation with Alex, right, that you described where you're like, tell me everything you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Manage the warehouse, manage the people, all that. And you're like, great, I'll do that. How did you know how to do those things he didn't want to do? Or how did you maybe build the confidence and learn those things?
I mean, a lot of the first year I was there was listening a lot. I spent just a lot of time talking to the team, talking to customers. I didn't change much. And it was very internally focused. It was more like, okay, I really want to understand how this worked. And I had the luxury to be able to do that because the company was doing well. There were issues that we had to address, but they were much more like process oriented internally. Like, and so a lot of it was just like figuring out the right processes. And I made a ton of mistakes. Like, I mean, looking back, would I have had the same experience and done the same thing? Probably not in a lot of cases. And I think like one of the mistakes I had was actually like understanding how to build a team and, you know, moving on from people that clearly weren't working and how to like evaluate and how to hire. I think that's the hardest part I'm still working on. Hiring is like such an art and a science. It's amazing. So a lot of listening and a lot of just like willingness to like be stupid and ask dumb questions.
Got it. So you sort of let things continue apace for a little while as you learned.
Yep.
Did you have a moment of doubt at all when you said to Alex, like, tell me everything you don't want to do. I'll do it.
Yeah, 100%. It was like, I mean, it was a total like fake it till you make it situation in a lot of ways. Like I'm smart. I've got a really good graduate degree. I've been around business and contracts and like this kind of stuff from a different side. I worked for years before law school. So I understand the workplace and like, but yeah, a lot of it was just like, all right, what lawyers do is like, let me Google that. Let me figure that out. Like what do I have to read? What do I have to know? Who do I have to talk to? Talk to people who are friends of mine who are, you know, in business. My wife had just gone to business school. Like, she was a great asset. She was in business. So, you know, a lot of it was just sort of like learning as I went and trusting myself, like trusting my instincts and really like stretching myself in a leadership position and sort of building blocks of what is my leadership philosophy going to be? How am I going to approach problems? Who do I want to look like as a leader? And that it was hard, but really rewarding because it was all up to us. Like it was our fault if we failed. And also like I'm responsible now for other people's livelihoods and like my decisions directly impact how we can pay these people.
How did you know Alex?
I actually knew him through my wife. They had gone to the same high school. So it was like, I think she saw him at some event and was like, oh, hey, you and Alex should talk. I think you guys would hit it off. She's an incredible connector. I would not be where I am literally today without her.
It's interesting because, you know, we often ask guests to reflect on the pivot away from big law as something where you're selecting for more career risk. You're selecting for more uncertainty. In your case, you actually left under somewhat unusual circumstances, right? Like in 2010, on the heels of, you know, Morgan Lewis acquiring Bingham, and you left without something else specific in mind. Take us back there. And how were you thinking about just the uncertainty that was sort of unfolding before you as you left Morgan Lewis, were trying to sort of chart what your career was going to look like, and then ultimately choosing something like this, which is a small business and itself, even just the business itself, carries a lot more uncertainty than working at a kind of large, stable law firm?
Yeah, I think being comfortable with discomfort is an incredibly important. You know, I have done a few things before law school where I, after college, drove to California without a job and got a job when I got there. I packed all my stuff in my car, just drove there. I have done stuff like I moved back east to join the Kerry campaign in 2004 as a volunteer, ended up running a county, growing this thing, quit my job in California, came back east. After that, we lost the election. What am I going to do now? I thought I was going to get into policy, move to DC, and be in the administration. Nope. Okay. Nothing. Got to go home. Living with my parents at the age of 24. Not happy about it. Figuring out what to do. Getting a job. And I think you learn through those processes that if you just put in some effort and time, it'll work out. You don't know what it's going to be. But you just got to get out there and put yourself out there and talk to people and something will happen.
I get that. And I just want to push on that a little bit more because I understand that approach at 24. And I think it certainly reflects a kind of willingness to take risks that you have. Mm-hmm. But also this is a different moment now, right? The economy's in a different place.
10 years later, 2 kids. Yeah. I mean, again, I've talked about her a lot. My wife was really great. She was she had a good job. She was we can hang, we can hang in there. Go figure it out. She's I'm going to be happier with you being happy somewhere than I am with the status quo. So go figure it out. And so it didn't take long. How old was I then? 34. Building the muscle to be able to say, this isn't right. And I'm going to do something about it because this is my life.
I also think building the muscle to do what you did in taking on the job where you're like, I don't know how to do half of these things, but I will figure it out. And then I'll spend a bunch of time listening and figuring it out. And, we'll see what we can make of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I was just so relieved to not have a BlackBerry. So much of it was not having to answer to anyone. I mean, answering to Alex, my partner, my business partner, but that was a peer collaborative relationship, and we didn't have a board. It's a bootstrap company, cash business. We spend what we make. We've never raised money. We don't really take on any debt. And so that took a big pay cut. I've left money on the table, but I wouldn't say I've left value on the table. Just the freedom of I am driving my own life now was a huge part of being just so open to learning and being excited to do something new like that again.
Given your experience before law school, it sounds like you're actually very open to risk and uncertainty. And so the thing that strikes me is actually why did you go to law school? That feels like the risk averse decision.
I know. I often wonder about that in retrospect. I played with the idea of going to foreign service and I majored in international relations at college and really loved it, loved it, loved the thinking and the frameworks and all that stuff. But yeah, I think law school was great. I loved law school. I loved the problem solving and the logical thinking and the processes. I'm naturally a rule follower. I may not be so risk averse, but I do like the, I do like that part of it. I think what I realized though, working in Washington as well was for that summer was I don't actually want to, Capitol Hill's a zoo, man. It's crazy. And it's I don't know if I like, and it's oh, will you run for office? It's whoa, no. I'm too introverted for that. And I also don't want to just have to raise money all the time. So I think like everyone's a mass of contradictions, and I think I probably have made up the same thing. But you know, I do really think my legal training has been invaluable. I loved law school. I think the challenge for anyone who loves law school but doesn't really want to be a lawyer is that, you know, while they say like, oh, you go to law school, you can do anything. Like, look, like that guy's a CEO. He went to law school. There's no like, you have to do that on your own. Like, there is no like career services for that in law school. You know, like it's like their career services are like, are you going to clerk? Or at least at Harvard, like, are you going to clerk? Are you going to work for a big law firm? Or are you going to like go do some sort of like, you know, nonprofit thing, some high prestige nonprofit thing? What of those three things are you going to do?
Fully take your point. Yes, you can do anything with law school. Look at Jared. He is the CEO and he went to law school. It must have helped. And your argument is sort of like, yeah, they're correlated, but it wasn't because I was a lawyer. You have to do that on your own. But on the other hand, you sort of said your legal training does help.
For sure. I think a big part of it is like people who, you know, when you're trying to come into business from the law, people who you talk to who are not lawyers in business just see a lawyer. And they have the context mm-hmm. for dealing with lawyers. They're like, I know how I deal with my lawyer. I call him when I have a problem. He solves the problem and charges me too much for it. And then I talk to him the next time I have a problem. There isn't a context for many people who aren't lawyers around what is it that lawyers actually do and how they do it. And I think that's really, it's logical thinking and problem solving. And and issue spotting is like a big one. It's like, let me like survey the field and see all the things that could be an issue and take them one by one and pick them apart and turn them around, understand them, and then address them. That's what lawyers do over and over and over again. That's what we do. That applies to all kinds of problems. But when you go talk to people in business or tech, like I talked to a lot of people, had a lot of conversations before I ended up like full-time at Sunforge with people who were startup founders at SaaS businesses, who were in hardware, who were in all kinds of different things. Their first line out of their mouth was like, we don't really need a lawyer right now. And then you're like, oh, but I'm not, I mean, I'm a lawyer, but like, I don't want to just be doing law stuff. I can help in other ways. They're like, well, yeah, but like your experience doesn't really, you know, line up with like what we need. Like, what have you like run, you know, have you raised money? Have you run a business? Have you been in charge of marketing? Have you hired? And it's like, no. And so I really have to give Alex credit for like giving me a chance to show that I could do it. Because I really think like it really is a show me situation. And if you try to pivot into business from the law as a general counsel or a counsel, that's still just being a lawyer in most people's eyes. You know, I had that title because I took it for myself because I wanted the functional flexibility when people saw me. I was still doing those roles, right? But being a lawyer in business is like 15% of my time.
Unless you're starting your own thing, like Sam Cox, you need someone to take a chance on you.
Yeah, you need someone to be like, okay, show me what you got. And then you get your reps and you find your place and you figure out what you're good at.
It looks like, you know, you're COO and general counsel for 3.5 years. You took the general counsel title, you know, to have the sort of functional flexibility as you described. But then around 4 years ago, let's say you took the CEO title. What was that transition like? And did you feel like, oh, now I'm finally leaving law behind?
No. I mean, we're a small business, so I'm always doing the stuff. You know, like it's just my role. But the CEO thing was more of a practical change. We didn't have a CEO. We had me and Alex, and he was the president and CTO. And so we were at the time entering some competitions, some pitch competitions, just to see, because we had never done it before. And it was really annoying to explain why we didn't have a CEO. And literally I was like, Alex, I should just be the CEO because I'm running this. I'm pitching the deck. I'm in the room with the, you know, like I'm doing this stuff and it's going to save us a lot of time and like calorie burn and a lot of words. If I can just be like, I'm the CEO. And everyone like, be like, okay, I'm talking to you. You know what I mean? not like, where's the CEO? You know, it's like, oh, we don't have one. Oh, you don't have one. Well, no, you know, it's a whole thing. You know, do I feel like I've earned to be myself to be called CEO? Yeah, sure. But did my functional day change much? Nah, not really. Like, we didn't hire another COO. I'm still doing the things I'm doing. It gives me, I mean, it helped me out because it gives me like a nicer progression on my resume. You know, that stuff matters.
Yeah. Podcast hosts find you as the CEO of some, you know, small solar company. And they say, hey, this guy's the CEO of this from, you know, law school. Let's go on.
Really, that's all interchangeable for me. And like, it really, it's more about outside perception than like internal stuff. So it's like managing that.
Fair enough. Okay, so now you are the fractional COO also of Animals.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
As we know, we had a pandemic. We're still having one. In hardware, it was really hard. It was brutal. We had like, Sunforge went, you know, I think 30% of our revenue lost, like from, you know, we shrunk. Had our best year ever in 2019, and then we're back in like 2016, like or 15 in terms of revenue in like a year. And then 2021 was just as hard for different reasons. Supply chain issues came up at that point, and like it was hard to build our stuff. Between that and keeping the team together, managing the PPP money, managing this, like it was just managing kids at home at school, and just everything that went into that, like running a business where. Like there were days when I literally had like $1,000 in our bank account because it was like, I'm waiting for people to pay me and I'm paying payroll and I owe them. I mean, it was just like, it was
in the company. Bank
account. Not my personal one, but the company bank account. And we, you know, Alex and I both took big pay cuts. We didn't lay anyone off, but like we sort of staggered pay cuts down the line. So the lowest paid people like in our office did not get pay cuts. Like, it was like we sort of like did a graduated thing, a non-recessive pay cut thing. So we got through all that. And I, to be honest, I was like friggin' fried. Like I was just like, Alex, I'm not having any fun. I'm honestly trying to figure out what to do because I don't know how long I can do this for if this keeps up. And I need to like take a step back a little bit and just sort of like figure out what I'm doing. And maybe even leave. And he was like, I get it. Tell me what you got to do. Like, we'll work with it. We'll work around it. So I sort of like went down to 50% time at Sunforge. It's okay. We have an awesome team. We're rolling. We got systems in place. And it turns out 2022, going into the first end of the second quarter here, we're like back on pace of 2019. We're like, we're rebounding like crazy. We're still having manufacturing challenges with supply chain component sourcing, but demand has come back like I haven't seen it in years, which is amazing. So I'm actually feeling really good about it. It's great. It's like so nice. But I also was like, I've been at this company for years. We're small, we're organically growing. So it's like, we're not going to raise money. I've learned a lot. I want to spread my wings a little bit and see if I can do this at a larger scale. Be a leader at a larger scale, find some different problems, find a different business model, really just like also have a bigger executive team was a huge factor. Having more people to worry about the stuff that I'm worried about all the time. Mm-hmm. And also not worry about money every single day.
Expand, right, for a second there, because I think that, you know, one of the things that's nice for people to see are those places where it's, you know, the particular challenges of different size companies and roles.
Yeah.
And at least in my experience, when you're on a small team, gets very lonely and isolating dealing with kind of all the high level decisions on your own. And I think that's what you're talking
absolutely
to, right?
That and just like in a small company like ours, like cash flow is always the thing, and we had a couple really tough cash flow years, and I also wanted to try something out where I didn't actually have I'll think about strategy and budget and like P&L stuff, but I don't want to worry on a daily basis about like paying the bills. And so totally accidentally, my wife is coming back into the story again. She used to be at Animals. She was their GM, and she got another job a job offer that she couldn't refuse.
GM?
She was a general manager there. Yeah.
Is that like a uniform title or something? And I've never heard that.
She's a marketer person in her career, and she was running all the like the production teams for there. They had they had a COO, a CEO, like people ops, and then she was sort of running during her couple years there, they went from 40 people to 140 people. And she was running that. So she was in charge of sort of like their scaling. And then she got an offer she couldn't refuse. And their COO got a different offer in an associated company that she couldn't refuse. And then someone else left. And it like basically their CEO had like her entire leadership team like left within 3 months. And none of it was like on bad terms. Everything was just like, oh, hey, this is what's happening. And you've got the great resignation and like huge amounts of turnover everywhere. So I'm sitting there like going down to 50% time and I'm like, hey, Devin, who's the CEO over there at Animals, I'm like, would it be crazy if I just came in to help? I'm very familiar with the company. I know you. I know a lot of the senior leadership. I'm not a marketing agency guy, but I'm an operations person. I know I can do stuff like that. And she was like, yeah. So they took me in as like sort of like a fractional COO. They're doing a lot of like management sort of like transition in terms of like how the company looks on the inside as well as externally. And so I'm kind of helping with that. And it's super fun. It's a really like nice new challenge. I'm kind of re-energized on Sunforge because I have this other thing. It's kind of like this virtuous cycle of like re-energization that has been really rewarding, and that it's a creative agency. So it's a totally different kind of vibe. There's a lot of stuff to think about and work on.
You kind of transformed yourself, it sounds like, from a lawyer, the lawyer in the room, to like the ops guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So something interesting here, and Aaron likes to get to this and ask people how they thought about career risk. And I want to hit that point from a different angle. Even when you take a new role, like the new role you took at Sunforge, which became the CEO role, that de-risks you in a certain way, or I don't know if that's the best way to say it, but basically it builds credibility and expertise and knowledge. And then, you know, even if that role, let's say, flops or the company fails or just doesn't work out, you then have a story. You've kind of bridged the initial gap. And now you have a new story with a lot of different other roles and opportunities that you can talk credibly to because of what you did. So like, even in my position, you know, I'm scared building a company until it's kind of very stable. But I do know that I have a lot that I can talk to now to argue for pretty good, interesting, senior type positions in probably many, many different places. And we're seeing that, you know, manifest for you in terms of your ability to credibly obtain another kind of position with overlap, I'm sure, on the skills you've done out of what you've done to date.
I think that's true. And I think it's also, you know, the Animals opportunity is really great because it's rounding out more flat sides that I have in terms of like size of organization. Like it's a, you know, it's a 10x or like, you know, it's a 14 times the size. So, you know,
yeah, lawyers aren't so good at math.
I was told there'd be no math. Okay. So I mean, and managing, you know, I was talking with a team there yesterday. I'm like, I'm your manager's manager's manager at this point. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like going from like being right at the ground level with my team at Sunforge to having been displaced, but also getting to see the field, you know, like having much more responsibility for like, okay, same kind, but like customers, team, shareholders, right? And those are the people I'm serving, and being able to adapt my leadership style and what I've learned at Sunforge and scale it and see if that works and take some lessons that I've learned. And also like legal stuff, like I'm working with, you know, I'm doing compliance stuff for them. I'm sort of, they've grown so quickly. I like to say, like, you know, you got to dress for the job you want, and they're still dressed as like this little sort of scrappy startup, but they're way too big to be acting like that now. So we've got to sort of like change the way the internal culture and processes to fit a much larger organization. So yeah, so it's super cool.
So with the last minute we have for the past version of yourself or the current version of every law student out there, folks who are at law firms now, you know, obviously it's not the Great Recession of, you know, 08, 09, 2010, but it's a, you know, it's a shock. What kind of advice or thoughts would you offer to help them think through their career from this sort of new vantage point?
I just had a call with a transitioning attorney the other day, and I think my advice is always pretty much the same. If first of all, you got to be honest with yourself about what you want. Maybe you don't know exactly what it is, but you've got to be always honest with yourself. And then talk to as many people as you can talk to. Like you cannot go wrong getting out there and talking to people and telling them you're interested in something new, because you've got to like put it out there for people to know and think about it and help. And I think like lawyers are really bad at risk, right? It kind of is baked into our profession, and all we do is de-risk things, and that's what we want. But you really have to allow yourself to be uncomfortable and be willing to maybe take a pay cut, maybe take, you know, maybe a little less prestige, maybe, I don't know, just something completely new and uncomfortable.
Work for free. We've had people, tell us they offered to work for free and been rejected.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's it. There's no single answer and no magic bullet. It's just like luck and broadcasting it and just getting out there and meeting people.
This was awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for inviting me. I had a great time.
Thanks for joining us for the hike up another winding path. If we got you thinking, share us with a friend or write a review to help others discover the show.
If you have questions or suggestions for a future episode, share them with us at windingpathspod@gmail.com.
That's windingpathspod@gmail.com.
In the meantime, keep forging your own path.